You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and of course, being the second Wednesday of the month, it's time for our legal hour. Our lawyer who comes and talks as often, Grant, is actually, I believe, on holidays. So he's actually broken into his holiday to come and talk to us. Is that right, Grant?
Anything for you,
Alan. He's a smooth in this bloke. All right. Now, last month we wanted to talk to you. We sent you away the question. I think it's a fascinating question. The red light cameras and the speed cameras that are fixed. We're not talking about the car ones because they were all checked over. The ones that are on the road at particular spots, and particularly with the cameras on the red light ones, they have to be tested. So they have the guys come out and you see them. They go up their step ladder and they do stuff with them and that. At the end of the thing, they have to prove that they're working. And I've actually seen this happen since the person brought this up. When they're tested, they have two cars with orange lights on them, and one of them's got a big speedo on the back, because A, you have to prove at what speed the camera's picking it up to make sure that it's otherwise they'd all be thrown out of court. And the other one is that they do go off with a red light. Now, the question was asked, what happens, because those cars don't have red and blue lights, they don't qualify for that. What happens if one of those cars hits somebody coming through on a green light because they don't have the authority of the emergency services?
Great question, John. As usual, it's always a good question. And one of the questions, there's two aspects of law, as you know. There's the criminal and there's the civil. So let's say they went through, they're testing, and because it's a red light that they're testing, so they've gone through a red light and somebody else comes through on a green light.
Yep.
I'd be very surprised if they don't know how to put everything on red lights, by the way. But anyway, let's assume that they left the other lights and they went green and somebody came through. Yep. The law is interesting in this area. First of all, just because you go through a green light doesn't mean you don't have to keep a proper lookout. You need, so if orange lights are flashing, but you'd tend to suggest that in a civil sense, a car going through a red light would be basically exposing everyone to danger, because you'd expect that if you can see a green light, you can go through it. So there'd probably be a duty of care. I would have thought there'd be a switch that you can put that puts all the lights on red. I've seen it before. I've seen it happen, mate.
Right.
But if they don't and they forget to at one stage and they're just doing it on the sequences rather than reprogramming, because it would be a big thing, I expect they expose themselves to some danger. I think that a better thing would be to have the police there and have somebody stop the traffic. Well, because if you're testing, you need to test it properly and not expose others to risk. So there's a civil liability. Would it be a criminal offence? I doubt it. I imagine there's some exemption. Let me tell you, these calibrated, because what they're doing is making sure that the cameras are properly calibrated.
Yep. And they have to be able to prove that in court, don't they?
Well, the thing you love is this, that they can put a certificate together saying that they've checked it and it's right, and the defence team, at least when they first introduced these cameras and speed things, they didn't want to spend all the time arguing about it, so the law was clear. You can't test these things. It basically a certificate from the police saying that, or from the authority saying it's been tested and it's correct, is sufficient evidence.
Right.
So somebody can't say, but my speedometer said such and such. Who cares?
Yep.
I know you do. Take it up with a car manufacturer. If they say you're going 102 when you're really going 105 and you get a ticket. So they don't want endless disputes over whether it's been correctly calibrated and everything else, the certificate. That's how it was at the beginning. I doubt that it's changed. Normally governments make it easier for the prosecution rather than harder for the prosecution, particularly in what's called strict liability offences, when you don't have to prove the intention to commit the crime. You just have to prove the act. So remember, there's two elements.
Yep.
Anyway, I don't know what the listeners know as much as you, John, but I'm happy not to go through it again. Yeah, well, today you're John. can I introduce my friend?
Have we finished on that one first?
Yeah, so your two questions was the red light camera have to go through the red light to test. Yep. And what happens if someone hits another car while they're testing the red light? So I've dealt with the criminal and the civil aspect. So is there deliberately going through? I would have thought if you have a way of protecting the others by stopping, putting everything or stopping traffic while you test it, you should do so. And well, I would have thought they're exposing themselves to some risk in a civil, but less, I'd be very surprised if there isn't an exemption under the Act to protect the proper testing of these things. So I doubt that it would be a criminal offence, but again, I think
so,
this is...
So, but would the person who got hit have a claim against the one that went through the light?
So the person who's coming through on the green. And this one comes through testing on the red. I would have thought so.
Yeah. But I'll just say that since the month since we, I'm glad
you played the disclaimer.
Well, in the month since we gave you this question, I came through the Springvale Junction, and that's got lights everywhere and all sorts of angles, and they actually had the guys with the stop and go signs on every corner.
But they should. So that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, but
to not do that would be a breach of the duty of care.
They don't seem to do that on every corner. Like on a major corner they did, but the one that the person saw, and I've seen since, there was nobody there, only these people.
Well, we agree, don't we, Alan, that they should put in place proper protection against people who would otherwise be facing a green light if they're testing a red light by driving through a red light. So
before you introduce your friend, I've got to take a couple of break. I've got to take a break and do a couple of sponsorships, and we're back to talk to Michael.
Thanks, Alan.
Imagine a dirt road full of potholes with a creek bank and some cane poles catching channel cat. I'm a little more country than that. Picture a small town with an old hound laying out front of the courthouse while the old men chew the fat. I'm a little more country than that. I just want to make sure you know just who you're getting under this old hat. Country than that. Think of a Hank song from days gone with a steel rod that's so strong it sends chills up your back. I'm a little more country than that. If you want to break home in a school zone with the doors locked and alarms on, girl, you're way off track. I'm a little more country than that. I just want to make sure you know just who you're getting under this old hat. Cause girl, I'm not the kind of two-time or play games behind your back. I'm a little more country than that.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And we proceed on with our legal hour. I've got Grant and Michael with me. Now, you want to introduce Michael, Grant, and tell us what he wants to talk about.
I thought Michael could actually introduce himself. He's a big boy. He's old enough to introduce himself. Michael, can you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, I'm Michael Drennan, and I've been here in Australia since 2007. And I have a background in mediation, but also serve in community service and helping people try to resolve conflicts to bring to a peaceful situation.
Are you talking when you say that you're there to resolve the or help with the mediation? Do you come from a legal background or from a social background?
More social. My university degree was in alternative dispute resolution.
Right.
And so mediation and in the States, each courtroom was required to have a mediation branch assigned to it to help resolve some of the backlog in the court systems.
So the idea is to save them taking up precious time in the courts to try and get as many resolved before they went to court?
That's correct. Absolutely correct. And mainly a lot of it was family disputes and minor litigation issues that could be settled in a side of a mediation room instead of the criminal courts and bogging down just the whole court system, because in the States, you know, it's almost a birthright that if you don't get your way, then you sue. Yep. And that's not a very effective way to live or to help manage a nation.
So when you're saying family conflicts, what sort of conflicts are we talking here?
Well, you name the gamut, but, you know, in today, probably the bigger rise that you find is within families as far as parents and their adult children.
Yeah.
You know, this.
I've heard that's on the rise.
It is on the rise right now. You have.
Elder abuse, don't you?
Yeah, well, absolutely. But there's some key issues that are affecting a lot of the generations today. And three areas specifically, you know, that help create conflict. One would be just general expectations and people not understanding their roles as they get older in life.
Yep.
The second one would be life stage or generational gaps, which is also affecting. We can talk about each of these too. And the third one is just unresolved issues from the past. Yep. And unresolved issues never go away. They just maybe linger dormant until a wedding or a funeral comes up.
Or Christmas Day.
Or holidays come up, and then they rear their ugly head.
I know somebody in the police force very well, and they say Christmas Day is terrible for family violence because all of a sudden you've got family that haven't seen each other for 12 months. Things that happened 20 years ago get brought up, and all of a sudden the police spend nearly all Christmas Day trying to sort out family disputes.
But I think one of the problems is people have this view that Christmas Day is the day we're going to have a bliss and harmony and universal...
And it should be.
Well, when you say should's a very directive word. I think it could be, but when you say it should be, you're adding to the expectation people have around Christmas Day. And the reality is, if someone's just died 2 days ago, don't expect to ho, ho, ho and a bottle of rum. It's going to be tough going.
But it's also, once people have had a few beers, unresolved issues tend to come up on Christmas Day, don't they?
You're already walking in with a heightened sense of emotion.
Yep.
And you keep your guard up until the alcohol goes down.
And then it goes.
That's right.
Let me just ask you, how often... we heard of a case a little while ago where the children went to their parents and said, if you don't do this and this, or if you don't give me... I think it was a bigger share of the will. If you don't give me a bigger share... You will not get to see your grandchildren ever again. Let's be fixed outside.
Yep. You're absolutely right. So as far as that falls in the first category I talked about was expectations.
Yep.
And with that, there's two expectations here. There's first the expectation of the adults. I'm talking to the parents.
Yep.
They still treat their children, their adult children, like dependents.
Yep.
And because they're going through this age in life where maybe health is on the decline.
Yep.
Or they cannot keep up with the gardening or keep up with going to appointments.
Yep.
Or their eyesight's diminishing, so traveling and difficulty and still wanting to be active in the area, and so they need somebody to help assist them. Uh-huh. And so they treat their kids as like their automatic caregivers.
Yep.
And so there's some expectations which causes tension there. But then on the other side, you've got this younger generation called the sandwich generation, because they are, you know, if you have a sandwich, like they view their parents as the top slice of bread.
Yep.
Their own personal children as the bottom slice of bread, and they feel like they're the meat in between these two generations.
Yep.
And so they've been accused, at least from the perspective of their parents, that they only treat their parents like some type of vending machine, a resource of kind, where there's expectations that maybe their parents are to watch their grandkids,
yep,
for a copious amount of time,
yep,
or that they are to be resources to use their parents' resources to help pay for school fees,
yep,
sports. Yep. Or are these kind of unwritten rules that are never really said, but just that are there? And so these expectations are bringing a lot of conflict, just as far as expectations that were never discussed,
yep,
but often just generally assumed.
So do you very often get that sort of case that I just mentioned to you, though, where the grandchildren want a bigger share of the will, or that child wants a bigger share of the world, and if you don't, you won't see your grandkids?
Oh, that exists, because it's greed shows itself in many ways, and greed is not only limited to other people's families.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
You know, greed is also alive, and sometimes greed, they don't realize it, but the source of the greed is not so much they want more, but they feel that they can't survive. There's this pinch that all generations are feeling, and that is, you know, probably generations ago, both parents did not feel required to work outside the home,
yep,
in order to generate a stable family, uh-huh, outcome.
Yep.
But that's different now. Yep. Both families are working, they're time poor, they feel to having to keep up with other with technology aspects, costs of bills, rising rates, council rates, increased tax load, all these things. And they see their parents squandering their inheritance.
I've got to take a quick break, but you said there were three.
Correct.
And we've only done one. I'll take a quick break and we'll come back and do the other two.
Look forward to it.
In the hall, but will the timely crowd that has you laughing loud help you dry your tears when the new wears off of your crystal chandelier? I never did fit in too well with folks you knew, and it's plain to see that the likes of me don't fit with you. So you traded me for the gaiety of the well-to-do, and you turned away from the love I offered you. Oh, the crystal chandeliers light up the paintings on your wall. Stately in the hall, but will the timely crowd that has you laughing loud help you dry your tears when the new wears off of your crystal chandelier? I see your picture in the news most every day. You're the chosen girl of the social stories say, but a paper smile only lasts a while, then it fades away.
someday. Oh, the crystal chandeliers light up the paintings on your wall. The marble statuettes are standing stately in the hall. What will the timely crowd that has you laughing loud help you dry your tears when the new wears off of your crystal chandelier? When the new wears off of your crystal chandelier.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, and we're talking to, we're going to talk to Michael now. We've just talked, he's into dispute resolutions, and we're talking about the generational gap. How do you mean, what do you mean by that, Michael?
Yeah, that's one of the other areas of concern where conflict is arising, with generational gaps, and probably three big areas that fall into generational gaps. The first one would be, or even you could call it lifestyle choices, three areas of contention that seem to rise. The first one would be political.
Yeah,
political tensions where generations are not seeing eye to eye on things, or it used to be maybe a generational pass down that if your family voted Labor, you were Labor. If your family voted Liberal, you were Liberal. And if your family voted Greens, well,
that's what happened.
Yeah, it is what it is. Yeah. But it doesn't seem there's not that passing down of the baton anymore.
Yep.
Of solidarity with a party.
But I can understand that. But what you're saying is, though, that can cause conflict. I mean, I don't care who my kids vote for. I couldn't care less.
Mm. Well, the challenge is, and it goes hand in hand with the other two. There's this unwritten rule that's spread throughout many cultures is there are things that you do not discuss at the dinner table. Yeah. One would be politics, the other would be religion. And things like that. And you go, okay, well, the harm in that mantra is that you've never learned to have a conversation that is civil because you've ignored it. And with people today, they've always been taught we don't talk about these things at the table. We don't talk about these things in company.
Yep.
But you have then taken away the ability to have meaningful discourse where you can leave still with a relationship intact.
Yep.
And a lot of families do not know how to do that. And so they understand that in the political realm, if you vote for something because you believe in that.
Yeah.
And then if somebody else, especially your kids or maybe your parents, if you differ, it means that they take on the preconceived notion that if, say I am Liberal, my kids start voting Labor, then, well, isn't my conviction of voting good enough? Like, you're challenging not just the party itself, but you're challenging my ability, because you're saying that the way I voted must not be rational to you.
Yeah, so
and they wear it personally.
I couldn't care less who my kids vote for, to be honest.
Right. Well, that's good on you.
and they can tell me what. All right. Now, the unresolved issues. What sort of issues are we talking there?
Well, let me just add a couple more this one, too. You've got faith is also a big cultural issue right now, maybe before generations in the past, where faith was much more adhered to as a family unit.
Yep.
But now that's not as widely embraced. But older generations might still hold on to these dear elements of faith. Newer generations coming up deciding not to embrace what their parents believe or maybe express their faith differently. And that's a challenge that caused disputes. But then also lifestyle choices. Yep. Is another part of this generational gap where, you know, oh, that would never happen in my day kind of comes up a lot.
Yep.
And older generations not willing to be accepting of new trends, lifestyle choices, or belief systems. Yep. And so those are causes, and these are these generational things, and the wider the generational thing, so then grandparents really not seeing eye to eye with grandkids, and not having the ability to allow issues to rest, and not every issue has to be brought up.
Well, just
in a family.
Let me just ask you that, because I'm really keen to move on to the unresolved.
Sure,
because we're going to run out of time. But how often would they get to the stage where they need to be somebody like yourself come in? I mean, surely a family can say, well, if you want to vote Labor, you can, or if you want to be a believer or not. Surely, how often would they get to the stage where somebody like yourself has to come in?
Before you get to that, can I give a different example?
Hang on, you're not on there, because you weren't there.
That's all right. Can I give a different example, Alan? Because talking about external things such as who you're going to vote for in an election, that's one thing. But the other thing is, and I think this is more pertinent to the issue, is let's say the situation you first brought up in this sandwich situation,
yep.
The parents are saying, you're not going to get to see the grandchildren unless you give us a bigger slice of the inheritance.
Yep.
That's more, because you can basically say we agree to disagree in terms of who we vote for normally. Yep. But when it's about I'm holding these children hostage, and
yep.
I can deal with the legal side, but how would you deal with a more personal confrontation like that?
Well, those issues that, like, I'm so grateful that you say that wouldn't affect our family because we can see past those things.
Yeah.
But those things are being held against. So why parents are saying, I do not want to pass down assets to my children if they're going to act or believe in this way.
Yep.
And so then that creates the tension. So these issues actually help create the conflict of other issues of like will, management, assets, yep. Time. All these things come into play when you allow those issues to rise and become primary issues.
All right, look, I've got to take a break, and we're going to come back because I've got to fit a couple of breaks in, and we'll talk about the unresolved issues.
Fantastic.
Okay, see you.
Track Cowboys. There ain't nothing like a big angry field. Tearing down the back straight, wheel to wheel. It's got a big V8 underneath that hood. When the lights go green, the bus is gonna scream. Track Cowboys.
Gary Rush, the living legend of sprint car racing, fires his 700 horsepower six-shooter down the back straight, pushes the cushion as he chases on the tail of the World Series. Yes, Kip Jackson, Adrian Marr, Brooke Tandil, and Kelly Linigan. Oh, yeah, here come the big with wings. Last lap, here's the boss of the sprint car ring. The Bumpery Bullet, Ron Ricky, banking the check on the final corner. Ricky smokes him. Oh, yeah, that one for the boys.
Good track. Dirt track cowboys. Dirt track cowboys. Mudslinging outlaws. This ain't no Hollywood Star Wars. It's a real deal.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Michael, I need to move on, but do you want to do us a little bit more on the unresolved issues?
Yeah, especially in families. Some of the big unresolved issues, here are adult children feeling that their childhood things of maybe even feeling like a neglect or favoritism start coming up as they get older.
And that can happen?
Absolutely right. And parents also minimize their parenting abilities of their kids. So right. When they're the older parents don't think that their adult children are parenting correctly, those issues start to rise, or they start to give unwanted advice in the lives, which also create a lot of...
I can understand that, but it's also not your kids. Like, it's your grandchildren, so I wouldn't have wanted my parents tell me how to bring up my children, so I've got no right to tell my my children how they bring theirs up.
See, you sound like a man with healthy boundaries. Usually when conflict comes, it's because the boundaries are not so established and are not so healthy.
Yeah, right.
But then the other part of it, when you think about... on the other side, that the grandparents will feel neglected. Loneliness is is a general health concern right now.
We're talking about a lot of that on this show.
Yeah, and that is a big thing right now. And so all these things have like, you don't come visit me enough. You don't call me enough. You don't let me see the kids enough. So all these things are just unresolved issues that have never been talked about in a healthy manner. And if they just had the opportunity to sit and talk with a third party that's neutral to help them understand that you want to get to a win-win here, that both parties succeed, and the goal is to bring restoration, not division.
So somebody like yourself, like, you don't have the legal thing where you say, well, this has to happen, is it? So part of your job is to sort of narrow that gap between the two parties? Is that how I read it?
That's correct. Well, it all depends on where you're at. Some mediation, court-appointed mediation, will be binding there, but a lot of the family mediation is not so much legally binding, but hoping to bring people to resolution without going and clogging up court systems or paying costs for attorney fees that can go on and on and on.
Michael, how often in mediation is it successful? Where
it is as successful as the parties want it to be.
That's not the question I asked.
Well,
in your experience, is it 50-50, 75%?
It's a lot higher if the parties are willing, and that's the hard part to gauge, because if the parties are willing and want to resolve, then it becomes, you start battling the little topics first, then you get win-wins, then you tackle the big things. And if you see progress in accomplishing a goal to resolution, then you have more favorable outcomes. But if people are unwilling to give up their rights, then it's a no-go almost from the beginning. You're just wasting your time.
That's it. Do you find when you're doing this that, let's put it this way, more often than not, you get people that are willing to meet halfway or meet part of the way, or do you find that so many are just stuck in a rut and they won't listen?
When they come to mediation, they're usually at a breaking point where they can't take anymore. And so they're hoping, and they have, mediation provides a hope for restoration. So usually they're at a point. It just takes a little time of massaging hurt wounds and emotional baggage they carry in. If you can help wrestle some of that away.
Just very quickly, because I've got to take a break. How often, when you get into, you've been given a charter or whatever it is, and you've been given the background of the two warring parties, what the problem is, how often do you find that that wasn't really the problem, that the problem was something else, and they've built on that?
That's a great point. Usually the issue at hand is not the real issue at hand.
So that's usual, isn't it?
Yeah, they're underlying issues that they just won't talk about, or they deflect onto something else. But usually the underlying problem is not, it will come up eventually. The real problem always rises to the surface.
Right out. Got to take a quick break.
listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Graham, we always have some great listeners, and they come up with, I think, some great questions. Right. Now, we're going to talk about these cars with orange lights. Now, not cars. They changed the road rules that it used to be a red light or a blue light. When you saw that, you got down to 40 k's an hour, right?
That, so was it blue or what?
No, blue and red when it was the police or fire brigade. They changed, and the ambulances, that if you were going past one of those sitting on the side of the road, you had to drop to 40 kilometres an hour. Mm. And you and I discussed it when that came in a long, long while ago.
I wish I could say I remember, but keep going.
Some of us can. anyway, they've changed the rules this year that now incorporate orange lights. So if you see a tow truck or the RACV cars, you are mandatory, you drop to 40 k's. If not, the police can book you.
And that makes sense. You're basically driving through someone's workplace.
That's right. However, we keep going here because, first of all, does that only include the one lane beside that vehicle with a flashing light, or on the freeway, does it include the other two lanes? Or if you're on a highway, we'll say you're driving down the... Oh, no, it's three lanes. We'll say you're driving between here and Hillsville. Between Hillsville and Lilydale, anywhere you like, where it's only one way each way. So the car's coming down.
I get it. I've got the description. So the one lane, and then you want to know, and would it be different if it was the three lanes?
No. I want to know that. Yeah, exactly. I know what you're thinking. But we also, when it's a two lane, one each way, the 40K, the tow truck's on your side, 40Ks. Does that also cover the car that's coming in the other side, which is one lane further over?
I can see why you didn't write this question down for me. It's too long.
Right.
So I'm going to fail the examiner.
So that's the two. We want to know what lanes it covers. Now, the other thing is, and this is where the another listener asked the question, they were driving down Eastlink.
Mm-hmm.
There's a truck on the side of the road. We all see them. They have these where they've got people working along somewhere. They drop a thing down the back with a speed limit on. It's got a big speed limit, right? So he's coming down the road and he sees the orange light. So he says, right, I've got to drop down to 40 k's. The truck's on the back, all lit up, says 60 k's. Now,
these are really complicated questions.
Well, it is, because that's all right to say, well, common sense prevails, but you only need someone who and I'm not even at the police there, who is black and white, who says, hang on, that truck's at 60, but it's only a 40K zone.
I might see if I can get you a criminal lawyer next time.
Well, you're supposed to be the man.
Oh, no, I am the man. But I'm your man.
So I reckon that's a fascinating question.
I think it's a great question. Normally $600 an hour, but for you, double our normal price. Oh, nothing.
You get more than $600 an hour.
But, Alan, it's always good to be here with you. I don't know. Is there any final question for my mate, Michael?
You asked Michael questions because we've got about 4 minutes to go.
Well, I think, Michael, when people go to court, is mediation an effective way of de-escalating, or do you think it's too late once you've gone to court? Because you're normally talking about mediation before court, aren't you?
Right. Usually mediation is before it goes to the legal system. If they can't solve a mediation, then they really want a judge to help give the final verdict.
But sometimes doesn't the judge adjourn the case for mediation? I think I've heard of that.
Oh, they'll kick it back to mediation.
Yep.
But usually if it goes to mediation first, and then it goes to a judge, it's very unlikely that it's going to be resolved back in mediation,
right,
unless the judge puts strict parameters and saying, I don't want to see your face in here again. Solve it, mediation. Because they know if they come back to the judge, yep, the judgment's going to be probably not as favorable for either party as they would hope.
Yep. So it's really the judge putting the demand on you to make sure that you sort this out, isn't it?
That's absolutely correct. And the overall factor, again, is if parties are willing to resolve their conflict.
But now, I just want to pick up on that point. You said if parties are willing, but how often, and this is a point I've tried to ask you two or three times, how often are the parties willing to do it? I can think of a case very, very easily at the moment where neither side wants to give in. So therefore,
mediation won't be effective for them. It won't be as effective for them.
Right.
They might get tiny victories, but neither will get the fullness of what they desire. Yep. And if they're happy to let go of some of their rights,
yep,
so they can have a victory,
yep,
then it's going to be so much more positive.
Yep.
And so it's really hard to give. I know you want me to give a percentage, but it's really hard to give a percentage because each case is different.
Yep.
And the desires of each party is different. Some's willing to say, I'm willing to walk away for the sake of the relationship. Like, yep, I'm willing to give up all my rights because I want the relationship is more valuable than what we're fighting for. And the other people are saying, well, no, I really want the item itself. Relationships are secondary to me.
Or it's how often, like, I'm talking about you now, what you do. How often do you get mediation between a husband and wife or partners that are in relationships? How often do you get them? Is that only a minor part of what you do, or is that a major part?
Well, marriage and working with marriages is a big part, because if they come to see you, then they are really at their last resort. They've almost tried almost everything else.
Yep.
And sometimes they come for the sake of somebody else, for the sake of their children.
You're right.
Or for the sake of their nest egg.
Yeah. The money.
That's right. Well, you know, because they've sacrificed much to acquire what they have,
yep,
and they want to make sure if there's a distribution of assets that it's done in a fair and equitable way.
Yep.
And yeah.
Well, can what you do affect that? I mean, or does it have to go before a judge eventually? Like, say you had a warring partners coming along, but we're not talking about, well, we're talking about living partners where
right,
they
right.
live together. So they come along, and they're really sort of at each other's throat, but they're willing to give it a shot. So how often does that work? Like, do you find that happens often, or do you find that they're really just doing it for the sake of doing it, but I really don't care whether it works or not?
I think most really want to make it work. Not maybe work to make sure the relationship's restored, but that they can leave on a good note.
Yep.
And I think that's key, that they want to resolve it in a way that they can leave from the situation in a way that's more hopeful than neglectful and harmful.
Because one of the problems is, if it goes to court, then it really leaves a nasty taste in everyone's mouth, doesn't it?
Well, mediation helps. The parties are still in control.
Yep.
Once it goes to the court, they lose that control.
The judge is in control.
That's right.
It?
So if they are able to keep holding on to their control, and you make sure they know that from the onset,
yep,
like we're in this room right now, and you have a major say in resolution.
I've got to go very quickly, but how often would it normally take? And I know you're going to say it's like a piece of string. How long is a piece of string? Is it normally over a day, over 2 or 3 hours, or can this lead on for weeks?
Depends on the complexity of the case. If it's a short case,
yep,
then you might say we can knock it out in an afternoon. However, you might have to come back over repeated weeks, because maybe each time you meet, you settle one aspect of the, and then you come back and you make progress, and people feel confident to come back for another session.
I've got to go. The news has just turned up. So thank you for
take
coming.
Take care, Alan.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Great to meet you, Michael. And I hope I never need you. Never need the opportunity, but we might get you back and talk to you. And thank you, Grant, again.
See you.